Hello and welcome. It's time for Coffee Talk, where no matter what time of day it is, we are always ready for that next cup of coffee. My name is Trevor Huth, and I am joined by my co-host, one Mr. Nate the Great Kosher. Nate, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I like that you carried that nickname forward this week. Makes you feel important.
It rhymes. It's really, really easy to just, it rolls off the tongue, really.
Yeah, I guess maybe I'll adopt that. I'll see how my advice goes, and then maybe you can keep it or not keep it.
Yeah. So if it's good advice, we're gonna have it stick around.
That's right. Yes.
Exactly. Well, it's time for another episode here. This is week two, Nate. We covered a lot in week one, and we are inching closer and closer to real regular season baseball here, stateside at least, and I am really excited about it. We're getting more and more information about what rookies made the team and who all, you know, who are the guys who might be able to help. All that information is coming out now because by the time we're recording, this opening day is in just a few days. So there is just, I mean, so much information out there for us to cover. We'll see how much we can actually get to. But before we even jump into that, at Pitcher List, the content schedule is kind of getting felt out a little bit. We're trying to figure out, get that in line because the season's coming faster than we're all prepared for, I'm sure. As it turns out, Nate, both you and I are going to be doing columns and new stuff this year, writing for Pitcher List. So why don't you tell everybody what you're going to be doing this year?
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited to take on a new column, which is the Deep League Risers and Fallers. And so this is probably looking in not your everyday 10 to 12 team leagues, but as it states, a deeper league with more teams, perhaps a dynasty type based league. And so I think there will be some content that ties to what we discussed, because we could be looking at some rookies, because if you're going deeper in the pool, you're going to dig deep for those names. That's where those rookies might be people to watch. And so I'm still figuring that out, but I'm going to be writing that as well as the catchers to stream column, which I did last year as well. Once again, perhaps some rookies could make some noise there. So I think it's something we can tie in and talk about. And also hopefully our listeners could check out our writing. And then Trevor, you have something new as well. What's that?
Yeah, so I came back to Pitcher List specifically just to do a podcast, and after the first podcast came out, it turns out I'm going to be doing some writing too, and I'm pretty excited about it. Usually I cover Dynasty content. That is not what I'm going to be doing for Pitcher List this year. I will be writing the expected starting pitching column, and that takes a look at starting pitching matchups over the next couple of weeks, so you can kind of plan out mostly in your redraft leagues, but you can kind of plan out what starting pitchers might give you a little bit higher of an edge, what starting pitchers might help you out, or, you know, even somebody you want to watch to see how they do. And it can tie into what we talk about, because I mean, starting pitchers can go from veterans to rookies. I mean, right. So there's a wide range of pitchers that I'm going to have to look into every week, and that'll mean I can help you out, hopefully, knowing what pitchers are expected to start, who they're starting against, and what that opposing lineup might be looking like.
Yeah, and I think we're going to talk about a couple of those guys even today, starting pitcher-wise, who are going to be getting some early season starts.
Yeah, and you know, I think right now we want to jump in and continue on some of the talks we had from last week to kind of follow up. And I know one of the biggest topics we covered, Nate, was the situation in Cleveland, right? Chase DeLauter was still up. Commons Ardo had just been sent down, obviously playing a part in that. And we appreciate, we got tweeted at us, both of us, but we appreciate that. Davison De Los Santos was also, you know, in that mix. And things have progressed a bit. We found out DeLauter was never really up. He was just still up as depth in the plan. He was never in the plans to make the opening day roster. We found that Davison De Los Santos did not make the opening day roster, and we already knew Kyle Manzardo was obviously optioned down into the to minor league camp. So lots of stuff going on there, and it seems like what we thought was happening is kind of working against itself now, Nate.
Yeah, that was interesting. I was actually surprised you text me that De Los Santos also did not make the team, and I don't think that's what we were thinking when we discussed last week. And so they finalized their roster on Saturday, and he was not included. So actually, he goes back to the Diamondbacks. I believe that's how that works, correct?
Yeah, so the way the Rule 5 works is that if the player's not going to make the roster, they are offered back to the original team, and if they want him back, they get him back, and if they don't, they don't. There's also some penalties that go into it. It's a very confusing list of rules, but yeah, so your Diamondbacks got Davison De Los Santos back. I don't know if you're feeling good about that or not.
Well, I mean, the power's definitely there, and you actually were talking about you felt good about him. You liked him, right? So I guess they just didn't see enough from him in the spring and decided he's not going to make the team, which was interesting then that they sent Kyle Manzardo down as well. Like, why wouldn't they keep him then? But,
yeah, well, you know,
I don't know.
Manzardo is probably going to be up sooner than later, especially if he hits to start the year. It never hurts to get guys a little bit extra seasoning if the team thinks they're not ready. Maybe they want to see something else at first base. Maybe this is just something they want to see for the first series or two, and then Manzardo could come up. Maybe it's service time manipulation. Who knows?
Yes.
But in terms of De Los Santos, it was always, I think, kind of questionable that he would make the roster. There is a lot to like there in terms of, like you said, his power. He has loads and loads of power. I mean, he can hit the ball really hard. He can hit the ball really far. And I have liked his ability in the past when I've seen him be able to use the whole field. I don't think that has continued on to this point in his career as much as it might have in the past. But he's got a lot of power to his pull side, and that's kind of what I think Cleveland was hoping, is that the power would show through and he would show enough of a hit tool for them to feel good about holding him on the roster, because he's going to have to get at bats. You can't just hold a guy and never play him. It's just not, you know, the rosters aren't deep enough for that. So he'll eventually have to get in games. And I think Cleveland is seeing what everybody should be seeing. Their division is not exactly the strongest division to ever exist in baseball. It's the AL Central, and it is,
it just
doesn't seem like a whole lot of teams are trying super hard.
No,
I'm sure they are, but they didn't.
Middle of the road.
Right. You know? Like, every team's kind of in this weird place where they're coming off a rebuild or downsloping from, you know, being in contention, or they're the White Sox. All of those are just super awkward things. And so Cleveland's probably saying, hey, we could still take another division title. So we need a guy who's going to be able to contribute. And maybe they didn't think the hit tool from Davison De Los Santos was there enough for him to contribute. And I think that's probably why he got offered back to Arizona. But I mean, if I'm the Diamondbacks, I am super excited to get him back, because there's a ton of upside there, and you don't necessarily have to rush him. I mean, there's a reason that they didn't put him on the 40-man to begin with, which left him susceptible to Cleveland selecting him. And so I think they think he needs a little bit more seasoning, which, fine. I mean, he's only, 20 years old, I think? So
20, yeah.
So there's plenty of time, and now I think the Diamondbacks get another year to try to polish him and see if he's ready for maybe a 40-man spot next year, and he can make another crack at a major league lineup.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, the strikeouts are probably a concern with him as he moves up into the higher levels. But as you said, the Diamondbacks don't really need him right away. They're pretty entrenched with Christian Walker at first base, and then this offseason they got Suarez from the Mariners at filling him in at third base. So, you know, it's not like he would even be needed, so they can further develop him. And they are probably happy they got him back.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he came onto the scene as an 18-year-old, and that's when I discovered him, was when he was playing in, was at Visalia at that point, and they had an away game, and I was like, oh, let's just watch this 18-year-old. And the first game I watched of him, I remember him pulling a double down the wall, and the next at bat taking a ball the other way and hitting a double. I'm like, oh, I think this guy's going to be able to hit. And then you look into it, and he has this insane power. So I think there's still a bright future for Davis and De Los Santos. It's obviously just not going to be in Cleveland, at least maybe right now. Curious, though, that they didn't just try to work out a trade where they get to keep his rights and then they can send him down. That happens sometimes as well with teams. But Arizona gets a really, really good player back, and Cleveland is still flush with options to play at every single position somehow. So things don't really change.
Yeah, it's definitely coming into focus with the regular season, you know, a few days away here.
Yeah, speaking of things coming into focus, for those of us who have been waiting, like me, who have been waiting to see which of the high-profile rookies are going to be helping out your fantasy team slash just being in the major leagues because it's fun to watch them play baseball, we kind of know who's there now. And I was shocked by one of them. We'll get to that later. There's a couple who are on the less shocking side. I would put Colt Keith and Jason Churio in the less shocking category because they signed, obviously, those extensions before the season started. So it was pretty high percentage that they were going to wind up on the Major League roster.
Yeah, so last week we talked about Churio. We talked about Wyatt Langford. Also, we talked about Jackson Holliday. And not sure if that's the one you're shocked by or not, Trevor. But Wyatt Langford makes the Rangers big league squad. Churio makes the big league squad. I think we were contemplating that was going to happen, but now it's official. So they both will be playing on opening day.
Yeah, and that's awesome for them. It's definitely Holliday that shocked me. I figured he would be up with the big club, but you know, a good list to start the year. I mean, when you get Langford and Churio off the bat, you're doing something pretty well. And again, I had mentioned Colt Keith too. I don't think necessarily Churio was that big of a shock. He signed his big extension over the offseason, so I don't think they'd want him to be sitting too long in the minors while making that kind of money. The same with Colt Keith. But Wyatt Langford, he was kind of in question. They had said if he had a good camp, and he came out and I think the first couple days he didn't really hit that well, if I'm remembering correctly. And then all of a sudden, like snap of the finger, he just turned it on and started being a monster. And now he gets to be a monster, but during the regular season and in Texas instead of in the minor leagues, which is really good for Wyatt Langford.
Yeah, good for Wyatt Langford. Good, as we talked last week, for Texas Rangers fans with Evan Carter also being there and having the embarrassment of riches with the young outfielders. I did have a quote here actually about Jackson Holliday, though. It's kind of interesting. So the Orioles, this is top baseball operations executive Mike Elias. He said, early in the winter, strong possibility Holliday would break camp at the game's highest level. Now, after sending him down on Friday, he said Holliday was very, very close. But then here's a quote, because of how fast Jackson's moved and his lack of professional experience, I think he's only played 18 games in AAA. He hasn't faced a ton of major league quality or even AAA quality left-handed pitching. That's something that's going to be thrust in his face when he's in the AL East, whether that's as a starter or the reliever they bring in to match up against him in the seventh inning. So at least they have given a reason for Holliday. But I mean, as much of a slam dunk as we think he is, that was surprising that he just isn't going to be there. I don't think it's going to be long, but what do you think about all this?
I mean, it's easy to point to, oh, he doesn't have the experience. I think that part is kind of a cop-out answer. I think it's fair to question how he'll hit lefties. I also think it's fair to assume that he'd be able to figure it out in real time at the major league level. So, I mean, perfectly valid reasoning. I think it speaks to the embarrassment of riches that the Orioles currently have on their roster in terms of just talent and youth to True. Where they can take their time with Jackson Holliday and it's not going to hurt them. I probably I mean, I wouldn't personally make the same decision because I think young guys playing is really fun, but I get why they made the decision. I think it's a perfectly fine decision. It just surprised some people, myself included. I was expecting Holiday to play shortstop on several of my fantasy baseball teams from the start of the year, and now I guess that's just going to be delayed a little bit, but that happens too. I think it's super interesting, though, when we talk about Langford and we talk about Churio, Holiday, and even Evan Carter, if you want to pull him back in. The path that these players are taking, we're seeing more and more, it seems like, the top prospects have this very fast path to the major leagues. And if
you're right.
A hyped-up guy, and if you come out and you perform, then you are going to be just shot through the minor league system. And we saw, I mean, Langford got drafted last year. Holiday was the year before as a high schooler, and he's already being talked about as maybe being on the major league roster. I mean, Churio's name popped up first very recently. There's just over and over again examples of these guys who are just shooting through the minor leagues, and I think it's super interesting, Nate.
Yeah, it definitely makes the game more fun. I think in the past, baseball has had a problem, or supposedly had a problem, with getting like younger fans engaged, you know. And they say, oh, this was America's ball game, and now the NFL is taking over, whatever, you know, people say. But I think it's actually good for the game in that it gets people interested. Some of these younger guys, too, I think the internet and social media is a part of it. We see them, you know, doing awesome things, and then we have better access to watch clips of them, you know, playing and excelling. And so then when they're accelerated and they make it, I do think that's actually a good thing. But I can see where it's different than how it used to be. I think you're onto something there.
Well, and I think some of that has to do with there's more data available when it comes to scouting these guys. You're not just going based off of your eyes anymore, which is a tough thing to do, right? You can see a lot of underlying data to know what a guy can become. Jackson Jobe is a really good example of that. From his days in high school, you knew he had high spin on a couple of his pitches, and that was just like public knowledge. And then he turns out to be this amazing pitcher, and you're like, well, yeah, I mean, look at what he showed us he could do as a high schooler, right? We didn't used to have that information. So that's one reason, I think, that these timelines are accelerated. And I like it. I mean, if you think about it, when you want to bring up the NFL, you want to bring up the NBA, these guys get drafted and you see them right away. Mm-hmm. You see them in the first year right after they're drafted. When from the major leagues, you draft them and you have to wait a few years. And I think that's why the case of Wyatt Langford is so much fun, because he was drafted last year. He finished out the year in the minor leagues and just shot through. And all of a sudden now he's on the opening day roster the year after he was drafted. And I think that is a very rare case that somebody has the ability to do that, because Wyatt Langford is really, really good. But in the cases when it happens, and I think this would be my argument for Jackson Holiday, if somebody is ready, just for your fan base's sake, I mean, it makes sense to just give them their shot.
Yeah.
Also makes sense that you don't want them to struggle and lose confidence. And there's a whole lot of things. Like I said, I'm perfectly fine with Jackson Holiday not starting at the major league level, but I think he's one of those talents where you could just shoot him through and it's amazing to see. And all of a sudden this fan base can see one of their top draft picks a year or two after they're drafted instead of 3 to 5 years.
And maybe you're right, as far as, you know, the fan base perspective goes. The Orioles already have so many of these awesome young players that maybe they're not yearning for like the first star in decades, where the Orioles would want to put Holiday out because they haven't had anyone exciting. That's not the case, you know. So,
right. Like, and I point to the Tigers as an example of this. The Tigers had been rebuilding for ever. I think it's been a long time, right? Since the days of Pud Rodriguez behind the plate and making World Series. It's been a long time, and it's been a slow rebuild. And Spencer Torkelson, I think, caught the brunt end of it, because he, I feel like, was just rushed through the minors just so he could make it, just so there was I believe the front office felt they were under pressure, as they should. They no longer are the front office, but
yeah,
I think they pushed him through really quick. So when Spencer Torkelson came up, he wasn't really ready, and we saw what happened. He had this really disappointing year, and then he came back the next year and he kind of got it. And I'm really, really excited for Spencer Torkelson this year, because I think he's slowly getting it. But I think that he got rushed. And I don't know that I don't think Wyatt Langford is getting rushed. I think there's a difference there when a player's ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Torkelson, I think, is going to turn it around, but was thrown into the fire. And that's the risk.
All in on Torque. I am all in on Spencer Torkelson. Him and Riley Green are going to be a lot of fun in that Tigers lineup for years to come. I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully all of our Tiger fan listeners are too, because it's going to be fun time watching Detroit play baseball, just hopefully, because Cole Keith. Oh, I'm so excited I could go on, and I might do that, but I'm going to have to do it with the microphone off, Nate, because it is time for us to take our first quick break here. But you're listening to Coffee Talk on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk. My name is Trevor Huth, and I am joined, of course, by my co-host, Nate Kosher. Nate, we have been having some great conversations, of course, about people who have already made the rosters or didn't make the rosters in the case of Jackson Holliday, but also, you know, Wyatt Langford, and Jackson Churio. Just a lot of really fun young guys have made the rosters, a lot of fun prospects. And we're going to jump back in with something different. And Nate, I think we're just going to jump back in and continue on for a little bit with our talk of top prospects. We made it through the top 10. And again, yes, we're skipping guys who aren't necessarily going to be helping at the major league level this year. So we'll start right at 11, taking a look at Arizona Diamondbacks shortstop one, Mr. Jordan Lawler. And this is one of your guys, Nate. I'm sure you got feelings and thoughts and all that fun stuff.
I do. Yeah. So this is a good place to start. So Lawler reassigned to the minor league system. So he did not make the squad. I think there was a chance he was going to make it. And the Diamondbacks during spring training had signed some backup, backup help just in case. Now I can't remember his name, who I'm talking about. He used to be on the Texas Rangers.
See, that's great when you're in the middle of talking about somebody and you can't think of their name, but then you're like, were they all that important? Or yeah, no, he definitely is, right? He got the spot. I can't think of his name either, but I'm stalling, hopefully giving you a chance to look it up.
I'm trying to find this, but anyways, Perdomo, Geraldo Perdomo is going to be the starting shortstop, and I think Lawler was going to have the opportunity to take that spot away from him, but it didn't happen. So he will not be on the 40-man roster, but he's going to be the top-ranked prospect in the Diamondback system. And once again, I think it's not going to be long before he does make it. He played last year in the postseason, and as far as everyone thinks, he's still going to be, you know, an awesome player. He just didn't, I guess, steal that starting shortstop position away. And so there's not much holding him back. Like, Perdomo is okay. He actually was an all-star last year, but kind of had some faulty underlying numbers and started off great and then kind of fell off. So I would think Lawler's still going to make an impact and might definitely someone to keep on your radar. It depends how your rosters are set up, obviously, but probably worth a late round flyer if you can keep him on your bench or if you have an NA spot.
Just to clarify, I think you misspoke, Nate. He is on the 40-man roster still. He just didn't make the active roster.
You're right. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. I did.
Yeah. No problem. Yes. But
thank you.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. He should contribute at some point this year, and I think he'll contribute at some point soon. He's already, made his debut, if I'm not mistaken. For some reason, I'm thinking he did, and yeah, he did. All right, cool.
He did last year. Yeah. So,
that would have been embarrassing. Right. So he made his debut. Right. So they're not necessarily just not wanting to see him or don't think he's good enough. I'm sure he'll be back sooner than later. I love Lawler. I am among the group who think that he is going to be a superstar. He was actually the very first, maybe for some reason I'm thinking I told the story last week, but he was the very first prospect that I ever put a 70 on for their value in the future. And I turned the report in, and 2 hours later, news broke that he hurt himself. He hurt himself. He hurt his shoulder. That was a shoulder injury. And I'm like, what? So I believe in the skills. I think it's all there. I'm really excited about him. I'm holding on to him in, I think, two leagues. It might just be one, but I'm really excited about Lawler and Lawler's future. I had to make sure he was included in a package where I traded away Vlad Guerrero Jr., which I know isn't very smart, but I took over a team and I was kind of just blowing it up to see what I could get. And I got Lawler and Kyle Harrison and something else in that trade. So I feel pretty good about it. But anyway, I have at least one Lawler that I'm really excited about.
Well, that's good. I mean, I think we'll talk, looking at next year, we'll be talking about him, you know, he'll be there making an impact.
Oh yeah, for sure. So let's move on to the next guy here. The next guy is somebody who has, well, I already technically making an impact, right? That's Jackson Merrill from San Diego. And oh man, he's a lot of fun, and he's going to be fun this year because he's going to have shortstop eligibility, but he's playing the outfield. So he's going to gain outfield eligibility and have a shortstop outfield. He should in all leagues, I would think. So, or in all formats, I would think. So that's going to be really, really good to have.
Yeah. And we already know he has made the opening day roster as the Padres and Dodgers played last week. So as you mentioned, shortstop primarily, but he's making the roster was as an outfielder, I believe. So that shows his versatility. And he was rated, let's see here. Want to take a look at his scouting grades. Overall 60, hit tool 65, but pretty consistent across the board and everything. And the Padres are a talented team. So for him to make it shows you his potential.
Yeah, he has sky high potential. He's a really fun prospect. But what I find interesting when it comes to the Padres is just the fact that they have shortstops all over the place. I mean, they have Xander Bogaerts, who is a, you know, obviously known as a shortstop, but he's playing second. They have Fernando Tatis, who's in the outfield, but came up as a shortstop. They have Jake Cronenworth at first, who, was a shortstop at some point. Manny Machado's obviously there. They have Ha-Seong Kim actually playing shortstop. And, of course, Jackson Merrill, a former shortstop in the outfield. I mean, they're just going through all of these shortstops. I mean, they're just putting them anywhere. It's shortstops in the outfield, shortstops in the infield. Their plan is to just take shortstops, I think, and move them to different positions and see if it works out.
That's funny. I didn't think about that. You're right though. That's a lot of shortstops, and they've figured out ways to play everyone. But what would you project?
Right. They just moved the shortstops.
Yeah. Let's get some good athletes and we'll plug them in anywhere.
Right. Exactly. Didn't that jerk from Profar used to play shortstop too? Didn't he?
I think so. Yes.
It's amazing. Like, I don't know.
That's funny.
Yeah, with Texas, he played shortstop. Yeah, what? I mean, that's
San Diego.
That's shortstop. Too many shortstops. I'm so sorry. They're all talented players. Don't get me wrong, but you know, at some point, you need to let a natural player play the position. It's Luis Camposano, as far as I know, has always been a catcher, so that's positive.
And yeah, Yu Darvish, he's still pitching. So we're good there.
Yeah, I saw that, and I didn't think that was right when I saw it the other day.
Yeah, I mean, he's I looked it up. I had the check. He's 37 years old, but he has been around. Obviously, fought some injuries, but
he's been around for at least 30 years.
he's a fun
hitter. It's just because. I think for him, it feels so long because he came into the league and was so dominant, and then he kind of faded out, and then he feels like he's just bouncing back and forth between being really good and then fading out, and then he'll figure out a new pitch, and he'll come back, and you know, I feel like he's just wavered so much. It seems, yeah. Yeah, I think that's got to be it.
But
anyway, moving on. Yeah, Yu Darvish, not exactly who we're focusing on for this podcast, but next on the list, 13, Max Clark. We're not going to talk about him. 14, though, I think this is an interesting one. We're not going to cover, I don't think, every single AA player, but I think James Wood is worth noting on this podcast because I think James Wood might just hit his way onto the Major League roster at some point this year.
Yeah, James Wood, just a physical specimen. Huge guy, 6'6", 235, and he's probably projected. So they have Dylan Cruz, right? Also.
Yes.
And so how do you see that? Are they fighting for the same spot?
I would assume one moves to right or left field, or maybe I doubt they do DH because they're both pretty athletic, but I don't think they're fighting for the same spot. I think at some point they'll just move one of them when they have to. It's not really that. Probably, I would imagine Wood moves to right. I think he's got a pretty strong arm. You can get away with keeping Wood in center and moving Cruz to the corners. I don't think it necessarily matters. They both have the skills to play any of the positions.
But they could both make an impact this year. I think it's possible. Starting the season, as you said, in Double A, but. I was actually looking up some ADP positions before the pod recording here, and he was among the top studs we were talking about. Obviously, they had the highest, but I would say he was like in the tier two. It wasn't that far down the list, and I saw that he's being drafted. So I think people are excited about what he could bring.
Yeah, that'll happen when you hit a couple of mammoth spring training home runs. Because that's what James Wood does. He's a physical monster, and he knows how to use that power and hit the ball a long, long way. I mean, I'll tell you what, the Nationals did a really fun version of a rebuild. It was very volatile in the hitters that they've gone after. I mean, when you look at Elijah Green and you look at James Wood and you look at even C.J. Abrams, it was kind of very volatile.
Yeah.
But they have – and even Brady House falls into this category too. There's a ton of upside where if you get a little bit of a consistent hit tool with any of these guys – I mean, I think we see it a little bit with what C.J. Abrams has been able to do – you get solid contributors and or superstars. So they have, I think any of those guys have this high variable of a superstar. I just don't know that they're all going to hit it. But I love what Washington did when they started that rebuild by trading Juan Soto away. And that's where they got, obviously, James Wood from. So really interesting stuff. Wood, I don't know if he'll make... He'll debut this year. I think it'll depend on how he plays. I think we can skip over Marcelo Mayer, but Pete Crow Armstrong, who's at 16 on the list, he's another guy who's already debuted, and another guy I'm just a huge fan of. So I'm going to let you talk, and then we'll see. We'll see if I agree with you, Nate.
Sure. So the thing about Crow Armstrong is he's a great defender, and I think a lot of times we talk about these prospects, we're either talking about their speed or their power, and you don't always talk about defense, right? And actually, I think other than outfield, there's sometimes defense could be the weakness for a prospect as they're coming up through the minors. So that's what's interesting to me about him. Also has some speed, and I think probably someone that could be like a 15-15, 20-20 guy along with good defense. So that's very attractive to a big league club. And I think the Cubs, I don't know, would you say the Cubs are rebuilding? I mean, they're kind of middle of the road. I don't know. They're trying to win now, I think, this season. But
I think they intended to rebuild, and then the prospects were better than they thought they were sooner. And so I think they're kind of making a push, and I don't know. PCA has got to be a huge part of that. I mean, you've covered a lot of it. He's a really, really good athlete, and he's very good defensively. And when we talk about guys' value in fantasy, we never talk about defense just because it's defense. And there's, I mean, nobody really does a category for that unless you want to do, I mean, I played errors when I first started before I knew better, but you know, you can, what defense does is it gives a longer leash to these prospects, because if, even if they aren't hitting, they're providing value defensively. And I think that is a huge value to have in and of itself, especially when you have a guy with elite defensive skills like Pete Crow Armstrong. And I think you're right. I think there's a lot of hitting upside there, hit over power, but I think he'll still be able to produce enough at the plate to be fantasy, more than fantasy relevant. I mean, I think he'll be a legitimate fantasy option in the outfield. And even more than that, have you ever seen Little Big League, Nate?
Yes, I have.
So Pete Crow Armstrong's mom in real life is the mom in that movie.
No way.
That is a real fact that can be Googled by anybody.
I think, and you've just blown my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, that's why I was hoping you would provide most of the excellent detail about what he can do as a baseball player, because I had that fun little tidbit to sprinkle in there. But yeah, he 100% not lying. That is a true fact.
I am going to have to dig into this.
That Pete Crow Armstrong's mom in real life is the mother in Little Big League. And if I got the movie wrong, there's a chance I got the movie wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's it. It's either that or Rookie of the Year. I can't remember.
Well, that's the one always.
But I think it's Little Big League. I think. I don't know. You'll have to double check me, but 100% his mom was an actor in one of those baseball movies.
Well, that's awesome. I was going to say, is his dad or older brother Henry Rowan Gardner the kid from Rookie of the Year?
Wouldn't that be cool if it was him? Especially like playing for the Cubs now too.
That would destiny. Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to package together as we move on here on the list. I'm going to package together number 17 and number 19 because they're both Baltimore Orioles, and that is Samuel Basalo and Colton Cowser. One of them I think is going to help this year. One of them I think is not, but both of them are very interesting. Do you have any strong feelings about either one?
I actually had Basalo in my dynasty league for a while. I traded him away because I was very in need of a catcher. But now he's going to have more flexibility, I think, going forward. They're going to want to play him probably not at catcher, obviously, with Adley Rutschman. So is he a first baseman, you know, ultimately, or what's his path? I guess that's the thing that pops up into my head.
Well, and that's a good question. Let's think about this Baltimore team for a second. This is what we're talking about with their flexibility with Jackson Holliday. So at catcher, you have Adley. Pretty hard to move Adley Rutschman off of catcher. He's probably going to catch long-term.
Yep.
So you look at first base, maybe Apollo can go to first base, sure. I mean, whoever's there now, is it still Mountcastle maybe? So you have Ryan Mountcastle there. And then you might move Basalo there. You also might move Kobe Mayo there, because Kobe Mayo is going to have to figure out a place to go, because third base is going to have probably Gunnar Henderson
or
whoever else, right? And then you have Jackson Holliday is going to be taking up a spot. And then you have Connor Norby, and then you have Jordan Westberg. So it's going to be kind of a mix and match to figure out who's going to play in a couple of years, I think. That probably involves Basalo or Kobe Mayo turning into an outfielder. Mm-hmm. But even then, you have Cowser, Kerstad, Enrique Bradfield.
You have
endless options. I'm forgetting somebody there. Dylan Beavers is another one. Like, you have all these interesting outfield options that are going to be there in a couple of years. So Basalo is going to hit better than any of them, but the question is, do you want to separate? I don't know what he's going to look like as a defender in the outfield. I don't know what Kobe Mayo would look like as a defender in the outfield, but you're going to have to find spots for all of them. What I think ends up happening is if they keep all of them, you're looking at almost a rotation between Rutschman, Basalo, and Kobe Mayo of who's going to DH, who's going to play first, and who's going to catch that night. I don't know that for sure, but just looking and trying to project out that roster, the best way to fit all of them in would be to set something like that up, I think.
Yeah. I mean, That was a good breakdown, because I didn't even think of all those guys. I mean, I was thinking of the, you know, A1 type of guys, but that's, yeah, they have a lot. I mean, it's a good problem to have, a lot of young talent. And
those are just the prospects or guys who were very recently prospects. That doesn't even count your Cedric Mullins and Jorge Mateo and all the other guys.
Hayes is okay too. Austin Hayes, he's all right.
Anthony Santander, like all these guys are still there.
Yeah, good point. And so I think what you're probably getting at, though, Basalo not probably making an impact this year. And you're pointing to Couser, right, making the impact this year?
I would imagine, yeah. And my last thing with Basalo, and I don't know this for sure, but does he lose value if he's not a catcher? Because he's an offense power-first catcher, and then you move him to first base, does he get lost? I mean, he'll still be a good fantasy first baseman if his power continues on the way it looks like it will. But is he going to hit enough to be standout at first base like he was a standout catcher in terms of what fantasy production he could provide? And that's another one of my big questions with Basalo.
Yeah, that's a great point, because it's hard to find catchers. And it's like being in Minnesota here with Joe Mauer. Mauer was never a power-hitting guy. Once they switched him over to first base, it was like, he really wasn't worth having on your team unless you played maybe in an OBP league. But otherwise, I'm not saying Basalo will have, 10 home runs a season, but I do think he loses value. I think you're right. That's a good point.
Yeah. And Nate, we got two more guys to talk about in this group of 10, and then we'll take a quick break here. So the guy we didn't talk about, sandwiched between Basalo and Couser on MLB Pipeline's top 100 list at number 18, is Brooks Lee, who is going to be starting in AAA, which makes him more relevant. We'll talk about Brooks Lee at 20. I don't necessarily think we need to talk about it, but Carson Williams with the Rays, I don't project him to help this year just because there's so much above him and the Rays are the Rays. So unless he absolutely forces their hand, I struggle to see him helping this year. Maybe you have a different thought, but I think Brooks Lee is where this conversation probably needs to spend the bulk of time.
Yeah, I know, I'm with you there. And kind of another positional discussion with the Twins, Royce Lewis finally kind of fulfilling some of his potential last season, hitting all the grand slams and coming on with the Twins. He can play shortstop. Correa's at shortstop, with the Twins. So it's going to be another situation where they're going to try to have to find a spot for Brooks Lee. But I think he's going to be good. I do think they'll use him this year. And I can't remember who you said before, but more hitting than power. That's the same calling card, I would say, for him.
Yeah. I mean, he was a big name on the draft circuit during his draft year. And that is because he was, such a good hitter. And we're talking about him now. He might not be the best prospect in his own organization, by the way, we're talking about him right now, but I think you're right. I think he's hit over power. I think if I were to expect something from him, I think he would be kind of that Jonathan India role where he's just a little bit good at everything. I think his hit tool is probably above average, maybe a little higher. Which is something that I don't know that, I think of when I say Jonathan India, that is a player archetype to me. And that is the average across the board tools, like the guy who's good at baseball, but not outstanding in any specific area. Yep. Like Jonathan India is a really, really good baseball player, but you can't look at him and be like, oh, this part stands out. He's just a well-rounded baseball player. And I think that's Brooks Lee, except Brooks Lee has a better hit tool. And I think that's where his stats take a leap on where necessarily like, Jonathan India's would be. But I think around that's what you're looking like. Maybe a little bit higher average, maybe a little bit more walks, but Jonathan India around in terms of what type of player he is.
And that can be someone you want on your fantasy team. Maybe not the most flashy, fun person, but a solid addition.
Also a guy that I generally look to trade high on if I think that they're going to be a better real-life player than fantasy player. before they debut and people realize that, that's not a bad thing to do if you think you can get good value out of that trade. Just one fun fact for your dynasty leagues, even though this podcast is supposed to focus on redraft leagues, don't tell anyone. But, Nate, what we need to do now is take another quick break. We will have more of Coffee Talk coming up for you after this quick break. Once again, this is Coffee Talk. My name is Trevor Huth. Joining me, of course, Nate Kosher. This is the Pitcherless Podcast Network. And we're back with our third and final stretch here on Coffee Talk during the break. Hopefully, Nate, you grabbed some coffee. I tried to. I don't think I ran fast enough, though. Burn myself all over. Don't do hot coffee if you're going to try it. Right? You don't run down the stairs with hot coffee. Try an iced one next time. But
yeah, that's better. That's better.
But, of course, I'm always ready for the next cup of coffee. That's what this podcast is all about. So let's talk about some guys who might be able to make a fantasy impact that we might not necessarily get to before opening day as we go through our top prospect list. I know one guy you want to talk about was the lefty fireballer, Mr. Ricky Tiedemann from Toronto.
Yeah, so Tiedemann, as you said, fireballer, another sort of physically imposing, tall, lanky guy, like we were talking about Paul Skeens last week, and he doesn't throw quite as fast. But what I want to mention with him is it looks like he is in line for a potential start, the Blue Jays' first series. And so due to some injuries and unknown factors with the Blue Jays recently, let's see, it was Friday. He is in the mix to make the opening day roster and could get a start during the first series of the season. That's because Kevin Gausman is hurt, and they're basically looking at him as a fill-in. But if he only gets one start, you know, I'm not sure. It won't be long till he's back, but he might even win that spot, and I could see him sticking with the big league squad if he does well.
So, really good fastball.
Yeah.
Really good slider.
I think it's someone we need to take a look at because he's going to make an impact this year.
So throwing from the left side, he throws hard, which is always a plus. Like I said, he probably has a plus slider and plus fastball combination if they're not graded higher than that by different publications. He adds in a changeup. And it's not just filthy pitches and no command. He has pretty good command by all accounts. So he could very well show up, and if he performs well, he might just take that spot, make it his, and call it a day and be a major league pitcher for the rest of his life. Who knows? But, well, not the rest of his life, but the rest of his career.
Yes.
It's very possible. He's got a lot of talent. And if he's going to start, he's somebody that I would for sure pick up just for the starts, just for the start. He's really tough to pick up, especially for lefties. He throws from a kind of a lower angle, and that creates some interesting angles with his pitches, you know, from the batters to the plate. And I don't know. I think that if the Blue Jays are going to commit to giving him a start from opening day, then they need to commit to him being there for more than one start. You can't just give him a spot start to start the year and send him down. I think that if that decision is made that Ricky Tiedemann is going to start for them and win that spot, then the spot's his, even when the injured guys come back.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that's what happens as well. And you mentioned that arm slot. I think that actually gives him, you know, I mentioned his velocity wasn't quite as high as Skeens, but because of that, it's deceptive. And, you know, that's another feather in his cap, I guess, to his advantage. And so I hope that the Blue Jays do let him start. It'll be fun to see him, and hopefully he sticks around. But are there any concerns you have with Tiedemann this season, like as far as weaknesses? I know looking over here, his walk rate was higher last year than the year before, but as you mentioned, pretty good control. So he's had some injury issues during AAA.
Yeah, I mean, so you're always worried about injury, and you're always worried about, you know, command and whatnot. If he's adjusted before, he can adjust again. Each level is harder than the last level. So some of the stuff that worked for you at one level isn't going to work for you at the next level. And understanding your own pitch arsenal and how to use it and how to unleash it, I guess, for lack of a better term, on the hitters is something that's really important. And I think he has all the tools, especially because his, you know, he's got something that can play to both lefties and righties. And he's not just stuck with, you know, with a two pitch pitcher and hoping his command plays. He has his third pitch that can help him out. So you're always concerned over young guys and their performances. Long run, no. I think he's got a lot of talent. And I think that even if he, for whatever reason, never figures it out as a starter, he has the type of stuff and the type of delivery that you could put him in a back end rotation or a back end bullpen role. And he could succeed. And I feel like that's a misconception, right? Too. People think that you can just throw anybody in a bullpen role and they'll be okay. And that's a huge misconception, because that's not true. But I think Tiedemann is a guy who you could do that with.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And, you know, having that lefty option out of the bullpen, I think he would fit well there. And I guess we'll see what his role looks like, you know, once we figure out what's happening.
Right. So another guy you had down here, Nate, is Sedane Rafaela from Boston. So what do you like about him for helping you out immediately?
Yeah. So I saw he made the opening day squad, and I wrote this down because I think you may have, did you get him in the last round in our fantasy draft we were talking about?
Technically, yes. It wasn't necessarily who I wanted. I was coaching a game and had it on auto draft, and he was just hanging around in my queue still. So I took him at the end of the draft, and I mean, I'm happy with it. I like him, but I might drop him soon.
So it wasn't a purposeful, I thought, oh, okay, that's interesting. Cause then I saw, he made the squad, and I thought, oh, Trevor, he's on top of things. So
no, I mean, and I do like Rafaela. He made some changes in the last year or two where he worked to change his launch angle so he would lift the ball a little bit more, or drive the ball a little bit more. And that's when he really saw his stock jump up big time. That being said, in terms of fantasy value, I'm not 100% confident he's going to be that future star like we had been talking about. I think he'll be a decent role player, because I couldn't tell you with confidence that I think his hit or power approach average.
Yeah,
in grading. But he's fast and he plays good defense, so there's value to be had there.
It would be the speed, I think, is multi-position eligibility, as he's getting some work in the outfield and was coming up as an infielder, but good on defense. And I think if you're looking for him, it would be for making a difference with the speed. And so I thought it was a little surprising, actually, he made the opening day squad. He's the number four prospect in the Red Sox system. I wouldn't say the same amount of hype as some of these other people we're talking about.
So let me ask you this question, because this is one I'm contemplating while you were talking. If you wanted the young outfielder for speed, would you sell out for Rafaela now, or wait and try to take Victor Scott from the Cardinals in a little bit should he get called up this year?
Ooh, good question. I guess I would maybe wait for Scott. If we're comparing one to the other, I think I'd be probably more excited about him, but not at the big league level yet, obviously. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, Scott's setup works for him. It kind of concerns me a little bit, but I think he's just a really, really good player. I think you're kind of, I don't know. I'd probably lean Rafael just because he's up now. But in terms of long term, I think maybe Scott provides more for you. But that's just what I was thinking of between those two. What about Jared Jones?
Yeah, so
just to move on very quickly.
Sure. Some more big news. We're coming probably to the end of our episode here soon. But Jared Jones made the Pirates opening day roster. Going to join the starting rotation. So it's a right-hander. He was the Pirates' number three prospect. And the news, actually, I saw Nick on Twitter is where I saw it first. Nick Pollock. Obviously, we know who he is here at Pitcher List.
Our token Nick Pollock reference, just so he stays famous. You're welcome, Nick.
There's our reference that we had to add to this episode. But that's I read it first. He tweeted about it. And so I think it's interesting. The Pirates, last year, they weren't maybe as terrible as you remember. They were 76-86. And NL Central, again, not maybe the most exciting division like the AL Central, but it's fun when prospects make it. And so you can expect that he's going to start and before Skeens, actually, which is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I have been such a fan of Jared Jones for a while. I mean, you can look up my Twitter handle and type in his name and you can find videos. I would anytime he had a big game, I'd go queue up all his strikeouts. I mean, I was a huge fan. It's a nice fastball. It's a nice slider. And I think I didn't even know the data at the time. And as I've found out later, I think the data is honestly pretty good. So there is a lot to like when it comes to Jared Jones. And I don't have a fun fact like I did with Pete Crow Armstrong, but I can tell you that if you're a Pirates fan, I say be excited. I think he's got a lot of electricity in his arm. Only question is, will he throw enough strikes? I think he will, but I also think it could make for a rough transition as he gets going. But the talent's definitely there, man. I'm really excited for Jared Jones.
Yeah, and so they're projecting him to get the start in the Pirates' third game, which would be Saturday. So over the weekend, we may be able to talk about his start next week.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun to do. I'm so excited. I'm so excited for minor league baseball to start too, so I can start watching those prospects. And then, man, just keep an eye out, Nate, because it's going to be a lot of fun. So, you can keep an eye on my Twitter account. That's at HoothTrevor, and I will have a bunch of prospect and dynasty stuff there mostly. You can follow Nate on Twitter. Nate, what's your Twitter?
That is at Nathaniel Kosher, all one word. I'll be posting links to our podcast episodes, probably to some of my Pitcher List work, but love for you to just follow us as your listener of this podcast, which we also have a account, which is at Coffee Talk PL.
Where I was heading next, reading my mind. Yes, at Coffee Talk PL. You can find us on Twitter there. That is where we'll tweet out where all of our episodes drop. Of course, keep an eye out on Pitcher List because we're both going to have written content coming out. It's going to be exciting. The regular season is almost here. I can't wait. But we're going to have to wait a little bit to talk about it because our next episode is in a week. For Nate Kosher, my name is Trevor Huth. We thank you for listening. This has been Coffee Talk, where we're always ready for that next cup of coffee. And of course, Coffee Talk is a part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Have a great week, everyone.